Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:28 p.m. on Wednesday, April 24, 2019. Before we begin, I want to thank Robert Montenegro, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Madison Truitt from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and all those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Kopp, Representative Shaw, Representative Stutz, my Vice Chair, Representative Ledoux, and myself, Representative Clayman. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Our first and only order of business today is House Bill 145, Property Crime, Motor Vehicle Theft Tools, sponsored by the House Judiciary Committee. This is the first hearing of the bill in the Judiciary Committee, and I want to announce the plan for House Bill 145. I'd recognize that Representative Eastman has also joined us. Today we will go through a sectional of the bill. If we don't finish the sectional by 3 o'clock, we will recess and return this evening at 5:15 to complete the sectional. Tomorrow, Thursday, April 25th at 5:15 p.m., we will hold invited and public testimony on House Bill 145, and on Friday, April 26th, amendments to House Bill 145 will be due at noon. That's noon Friday, April 26th, for all amendments, and we will start taking up the amendments at our meeting at 1 p.m. that day. Here to present the bill is Lizzie Kubitz, the House Judiciary Committee aide. Ms. Kubitz, if you would please come forward, identify yourself for the record, and then you may begin your remarks. And I would ask committee members to please try to limit your questions until after we finish the sectional.
Thank you, Chair Clayman. For the record, my name is Lizzie Kubitz, staff to Representative Clayman and the House Judiciary Committee aide. So we are looking at House Bill 145, Version U, starting with Sections 1 and 2. Sections 1 and 2 of the bill are conforming amendments that reflect changes made in Section 28 of the bill that we'll get to later on. Section 3 removes marriage as a defense if the person engages in sexual activity with their spouse when they know their spouse is incapacitated or unaware that the sexual act is being committed. Because of the complex legal and factual issues that may arise in these situations, the defense of marriage still applies in situations where a spouse is the caretaker of their partner who is mentally incompetent with dementia or Alzheimer's or is mentally ill, but still consents to the contact. A person who is incapacitated or unaware that a sexual act is being committed is legally and factually unable to consent to sexual activity in most other circumstances unless specifically excluded by statute or case law. Consent remains a defense to sexual assault. Moving on to Section 4. Section 4 is a conforming amendment which amends AS 1146-130 subsection A to reflect the changes made in Section 11 of the bill, which we will get to in a moment. Section 4 also removes inflation adjustment for theft in the second degree. Sections 5 through 10 of the bill remove inflation adjustment from all property crime statutes in sections 5 through 10. Section 11 of this bill amends AS 1146-285, the statute related to fraudulent use of an access device, to include theft of an identification document. This clarification addresses a gap in the statute identified by Cancanton v. State in 2015. With this amendment, the offense will include fraudulent use of both an access device and an identification document. The amendment also restructures the offense levels to a Class B felony if the theft using an access device or identification document is $25,000 or more. Moving on, a Class C felony if the theft is $75 or more and less than $25,000, and a Class A misdemeanor if the theft is less than $75. These financial levels for fraudulent use of an access device or identification document are different than the financial levels You might see for theft in the second degree, theft in the third degree, and theft in the fourth degree, because the impact on the victim of identity theft is more serious than the effect on a victim of just standard theft. In addition, the requirement of proof of intent to defraud and AS 1146-285 is a more serious culpability than intent to deprive another of property in AS 1146-100. To provide a little background on this section, the crime of fraudulent use of an access device was first enacted in 1978. However, there were no dollar amounts included in this initial version of the offense. The statute was amended in 2000, at which time the legislature specified that if the value of property or services taken was less than $50, the offense would be a Class B misdemeanor. And if the value of property or services taken was $50 or more, but less than $500, it was a Class A misdemeanor. If the value of property or services taken was $500 or more, but less than $25,000, it was a Class C felony, and anything over $25,000 was a Class B felony. In 2005, the legislature made additional changes to crimes involving the theft of access devices in House Bill 131. First, the crime of theft in the second degree was amended to include the theft of an access device. At that time, the taking of an access device, regardless of whether it was used, was made a Class C felony. And secondly, the felony level threshold for fraudulent use of an access device was reduced to $50 or more. According to testimony provided in committee on House Bill 131, these types of offenses had increased 100% nationwide. Some states had lowered or eliminated the value level needed for a felony level threshold for these types of offenses. When comparing the $50 threshold to other crimes in Alaska, it was noted that crime of forgery is a felony regardless of the amount that is forged. Thus, if a person forges a check that's made out for $5, that conduct is a felony. In 2014, the legislature again amended the felony threshold for fraudulent use of an access device and brought it up to $750. This change brought the felony level threshold in line with other property offenses that were amended at the same time. Since 2014, the felony level threshold for property offenses has changed a few times and is currently $750. Thank you for indulging that bit of history. Section 4 of the bill also removes inflation adjustments. Section 11. I apologize, not Section 4 of the bill, Section 11. Moving on to Section 12. Section 12 amends AS 1146-295, the application of prior convictions, to apply to theft in the third degree in determining the existence of prior convictions in the recidivist theft statutes. Section 13 removes inflation adjustment for vehicle theft in the first degree. Section 14 amends AS 1146 by adding a new section establishing the crime of possession of motor vehicle theft tools as a Class A misdemeanor. The new crime is similar to AS 1146-315, possession of burglary tools, which is also a Class A misdemeanor. You'll see in that section, in addition to mechanical tools used to unlock a motor vehicle, the amendment also includes an electronic unlocking device as a motor vehicle theft tool. Electronic unlocking devices are devices used to capture the electronic signals from key fobs and other electronic locking systems to unlock a motor vehicle without permission. The amendment does not include a screwdriver as a motor vehicle theft tool, just as a screwdriver is not a burglary tool under AS 1146-315. Moving on, sections 15 through 20 of the bill remove inflation adjustment from property crime statutes. Section 21 adds a new subsection E to AS 1146980 that allows prosecutors to aggregate crimes under theft in the second degree if they occur within 180 days, the amount is more than $750 and less than $25,000, and the property or services are taken from one or more persons or commercial establishments. Under current law, the prosecution aggregates the theft amounts when it can prove that the defendant or defendants committed the criminal acts, quote, under one course of conduct. This amendment to the statute does not require proof of a single course of conduct and instead requires proof that the crimes occurred within 180 days and were from one or more persons or commercial establishments. Section 22 amends the second degree terroristic threatening statute, AS 1156810, subsection A, to cover an individual who knowingly threatens to commit a crime against a person or property and recklessly disregards the risk that the threats will cause the evacuation of a building, will cause serious public inconvenience, or will place the public or a substantial group of the public in fear of serious physical injury. The amended statute covers real threats of violence as well as false threats.
And I note that Representative Wohl has also joined us. Please proceed.
Thank you. Terroristic threatening in the second degree is directed at threats that, if carried out, are likely to affect a substantial number of people. So threats to schools, trains, buses, airplanes, businesses, and offices are examples reflected in various tragic events over the past 30 years. The amended statute addresses conduct that is usually different from assault in the third degree, which is under AS 1141220A, subsection 1A, which addresses a person placing another person in fear of imminent serious physical injury by means of a dangerous instrument, and AS 1141220A, subsection 2, which addresses repeated threats to cause death or serious physical injury to another person. Both terroristic threatening in the second degree and assault in the third degree are Class C felonies. Section 23 separates production from viewing in the crime of viewing or production of an indecent picture, making a distinction between in-person viewing and viewing of an indecent picture. It increases the age at which a person can consent to having these pictures taken of themselves from 13 years of age to 16 years of age. Sections 24 and 25 are conforming changes. We here in these sections, we're changing the word photography to production of pictures. Section 26 is a classification section. This section makes production of an indecent picture of a person under the age of 16 a Class B felony, which will be sentenced as a sexual felony later on in Section 38 of the bill. It also makes viewing an indecent picture of a person under the age of 16 a Class C felony, makes production of an indecent picture of an adult a Class C felony, and makes viewing of an indecent picture of an adult a Class A misdemeanor. Section 27 adds a new subsection G to AS 1161123 to provide a defense to the crime of indecent viewing or production of a picture. A defense requires some evidence to put the defense in issue, and then the prosecution has the burden of disproving the existence of the defense beyond a reasonable doubt. Section 28 creates an additional tier of drug offense, a Class A felony, for possession with intent to manufacture or deliver large quantities of Schedule 1A controlled substances, which include opiates and heroin, and Schedule 2A controlled substances, which include methamphetamines. The higher felony level for this controlled substance offense is directed at dealers and distributors and not at the possession level. In Alaska, the federal government prosecutes the majority of large quantity drug dealers. The penalties in federal court for similar quantities are greater than the penalties in this amendment. This Class A felony would give state prosecutors an option for prosecuting large quantity drug dealers when federal prosecutors may decline that case. Sections 29, 30, and 31 are conforming changes to reflect changes made earlier in Section 28 of the bill. Section 31 does include further provisions. The section amends subsection A by establishing a basis to prosecute repeat offenders of possession of any amount of Schedule 1A or 2A controlled substances such as opiates, heroin, and methamphetamine at the Class C felony level. Specifically, a person commits a felony if they possess any amount of a Schedule 1A or 2A drug and they have been previously convicted two or more times of drug possession of a Schedule 1A or 2A controlled substance, either as a felony or as a misdemeanor, as described in the statute. This amendment also confirms that certain possession felonies are not affected by this new provision within the bill, such as felony possession of heroin and opiates near a school and felony possession of date rape drugs. Section 32 is a conforming change, amending AS 1171040 subsection D to reflect the changes made in Section 28 of the bill that we previously went over. Section 33 has two conforming changes. First, the bill amends the section to reflect the changes made in 28 of the bill. And secondly, it amends AS 1171050 subsection A4 by adding the new paragraph of section 31 above into the list of exemptions of what constitutes misdemeanor drug possession. Section 34 is a conforming amendment to reflect the changes made in section 28 of the bill. Section 35 has two conforming changes. The first reflects the changes made in section 28 of the bill, and secondly, it adds the new paragraphs of section 28 and section 34 into the list of crimes that may not be prosecuted if that person sought in good faith either medical or law enforcement aid for another person they believe to be having a drug overdose. Section 36, we're looking at AS 1255027 related to credit for time spent towards service of a sentence of imprisonment. It adds a new subsection to read, a court may only grant credit for time spent towards service of a sentence of imprisonment under this section if the court finds that the sentence, including any credit toward the sentence of imprisonment, meets the requirements of AS 1255005. To provide a little background here on section 36, in State versus Justin Schneider, it appears that the prosecution and the court may not have understood the legislature's intent when it passed House Bill 15 in 2015. Looking back at a legislative history, during the House Judiciary Committee meeting on House Bill 15 on March 23rd, 2015, from approximately 1:46 p.m. to 1:53 p.m., Representative Wilson confirmed that the courts should not be required to grant jail credit for time in treatment or on electronic monitoring credit simply because the defendant had completed treatment or had not committed any crimes while on electronic monitoring. Representative Wilson confirmed that her intent as the sponsor of the bill was that judges should not be required to grant credit for electronic monitoring. Representative Klayman then discussed a proposed amendment that would change the word shall under AS 1255027 subsection D to May. As Representative Klayman explained, a judge should decline to grant credit for electronic monitoring or drug treatment in some cases based on the specifics of that case, and grant jail credit in other cases, all depending on the specific circumstances surrounding that case. Representative Klayman then moved an amendment that changed shall to may. That amendment passed without objection, and the May language is now incorporated in AS 1255027 subsection D. So the reason behind adding the new subsection A to the section of the bill is to make sure that all parties understand that the sentencing court has discretion in determining whether to grant credit for time spent towards service of a sentence. Specifically, before granting any credit, the court must consider and apply the sentencing criteria set forth in 1255005 and announced by the Supreme Court in State v. Cheney to question whether to grant credit for time spent on electronic monitoring or a treatment program. Section 37 amends AS 1255125 subsection D by increasing the presumptive sentencing range for first-time Class B felony offenders from 0 to 2 years to 90 days to 2 years. This section also adds enhanced felony sentences for making or possessing with intent to manufacture methamphetamine in a home or lodging where children live, or engaging children in the manufacture of methamphetamine. Section 38 amends 1255125 subsection A, which establishes sentences for sexual felonies, to add conforming language reflected in the changes made in sections 23 through 26 of the bill that we discussed earlier. Section 39 amends 1255135 subsection A2 by increasing the maximum sentence for some Class A misdemeanors from 30 to 90 days. This amendment is intended to give judges greater discretion in sentencing individuals convicted of misdemeanor charges. Moving on to section 40, which amends 1255135 subsection B1. It increases the maximum sentence for some Class B misdemeanors from 10 days to 30 days. Again, this is intended to give judges greater discretion in sentencing individuals. Section 41 is a conforming change that's reflected in the changes made in Section 28 of the bill. Section 42 is another conforming change. It adds viewing or production of an indecent picture under AS 1161123 F1 or 2 to the definition of sexual felony. Section 43 is a conforming change, amending 1263010 subsection D to reflect the changes made in section 45, which we will get to in a moment. Section 44, related to the registration of sex offenders and related requirements under 1263010, clarifies that a person may petition the Department of Public Safety for removal from the registry if the petitioner submits proof acceptable to the department that the facts underlying the conviction in another jurisdiction do not constitute a sex offense or child kidnapping in Alaska. Currently, in at least 13 states, an indecent exposure conviction for public urination, for example, can trigger sex offender registration requirements. Of those states, two limit registration to those who committed the act in view of a minor. This amendment is intended to provide an option to petition the department to, quote, opt out of registering if the conduct would not be a sex crime in the state of Alaska. Section Section 45, Amends 1263.020 to clarify that a person who is convicted of an offense as an adult and required to register as a sex offender or child kidnapper in another jurisdiction is also required to register as a sex offender in Alaska. Section 46, Amends 1263.100, subsection 6, to add a person who is convicted of an offense as an adult and required to register as a sex offender or child kidnapper in another jurisdiction to the definition of sex offender or child kidnapper. Section 47, Amends 1865.087, subsection D, to require the Department of Public Safety to review procedures and adopt regulations to allow individuals with sex offense convictions in another state to petition for removal from the registry because the facts underlying the out-of-state conviction do not constitute a sex offense in Alaska, as we discussed above in the above section. Section 48 is a conforming change, amending 1865.087 to reflect the change we discussed in Section 46. Section 49 amends 2835.030, subsection O, to allow the Division of Motor Vehicles to restore a driver's license if a person has had no driving-related offenses in the 10-year period before applying for the restoration of their license. A license may not be restored if the revocation was ordered in a case in which the person was also convicted of a crime where homicide, assault in the first and second degree, or assault of an unborn child was involved. Section 50 amends 2835.032Q to allow subsection Q to allow the Division of Motor Vehicles to restore a driver's license if the person has had no driving-related offenses in the 10-year period before applying for the restoration of their license. As we mentioned above, a license may not be restored if the revocation was ordered in a case in which the person was also convicted of a crime of homicide, assault in the first and second degree, or assault of an unborn child. Section 51 amends 3330.011, subsection A, by changing the minimum term of imprisonment in which the Department of Corrections must conduct a risk assessment and prepare a written case plan to 90 days. Further, it amends subsection A9 to require the Department of Corrections to coordinate with community reentry coalitions or other providers of reentry services when developing a written reentry plan for prisoners. And finally, section 51 creates a new subsection, AS 3330.011, subsection A12, that requires regular reports on offender management plan implementation that includes the number of prisoners provided written case plans, the number of written case plans initiated within the preceding year, and the number of written case plans that were updated in the preceding year. Section 52 is a conforming change, which reflects changes made in Section 28 of the bill. Section 53 amends 4419.647, subsection A, by adding a requirement that the Alaska Judicial Council include the data collected by the Department of Law as described in Section 58 in their annual report. We will get to Section 58 here in a moment. Section 54 amends 4423.020 by adding a new subsection K that requires the Department of Law to develop a method to track certain information and to report about sex offense complaints and disposition of those cases. Section Section 55 amends 4423040 by adding a new subsection B that requires the Department of Law to gather and report data to the Alaska Judicial Council on felony sex offenses, including the number reported but not referred for prosecution, the number referred for prosecution that were not prosecuted, and the number prosecuted that resulted in a conviction of a crime other than a sex offense. Section 56 adds a new section under 4441050 to first require that within 30 days after collection of a sexual assault kit, it is sent to an accredited lab or Department of Public Safety operated laboratory facility. Second, it ensures that the sexual assault kit undergoes testing within 1 year of the laboratory receiving the kit, and third, within 2 weeks following completion of testing, there should be reasonable effort made to notify the victim that testing occurred. Failure to meet this timeline will not cause a case to be dismissed, and if a case is resolved prior to testing, it is no longer required. Section 57, under 4441070 subsection A, related to reporting on untested sexual assault examination kits, requires the Department of Public Safety to include additional data about which kits were ineligible for testing and why. Section 58 is a conforming change, changing this section to reflect the changes made in Section 57. Section 59 adds a new subsection E that includes the definitions of why a sexual assault kit may be ineligible for testing, such as it is scientifically unviable, it is ineligible for CODIS, which stands for Combined DNA Index System, a national program that links crimes to DNA, or it is an anonymous kit. Section 60 is a conforming change, amending 4712315 subsection A to reflect the changes made earlier in the bill under section 28. And finally, the last three sections here. Section 61 is a repealer section related to inflation adjustments. Section 62 relates to applicability provisions, and Section 63 relates to uncodified law. Thanks for bearing with me through that long sectional.
Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Questions about content of the bill or I mean, a couple of these sections triggered questions for me, but I didn't know how deep we're getting in the bill right now.
Well, this is the opportunity.
It. This is it. Okay.
We're on a pretty tight schedule that I announced when we first
started. All right. I have a couple questions, if now's the time. Is public urination a sex crime in Alaska?
Through the chair, Representative Wolt, no. To my knowledge, it is not a sex crime in Alaska. But we mentioned that the history or the background of other states where it is a sex crime. So if this bill were to go into effect and out of state sex offenders who were convicted of crimes related to public urination had to register in Alaska, in other sections that we described, we provided an opt-out option if the department were to verify that that sex offense doesn't apply to the laws in the state of Alaska.
I guess it seems like it has to be determined that it isn't a sex crime, but you're saying, to your knowledge, it isn't. So, I mean, it isn't. Right. Okay. So then if someone were convicted of that in another state, came here and was told to register because of a public urination offense, we could easily say, sorry, that's not a sex crime here. Okay. Thank you. I have a couple more, but if you want to spread it around, that's fine.
Anyone else seems to have a question? Representative Eastman, go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm just curious. I noticed this is a fairly extensive bill. What's driving the due date for amendments? I noticed it's less than 48 hours.
That's the schedule we're on, so we can move crime bills. Representative Kopp, go ahead.
So just kind of looking at the meat of the bill, Section 1, Section 2, both referring to Section 28, the new Class A felony, I like this approach of being able to establish prosecutable levels for actually trafficking, and that's kind of something law enforcement's been asking for. Can you talk a little bit about the effort that goes on, the discussion that goes on between the state and the federal prosecutors right now, how that works now and kind of how it would work after a tool like this was in place?
I recognize we don't, I think the folks from the prosecutor's office or from the Department of Law are primarily up in Senate Finance today, so they're not with us. Okay. But they will be if we don't get finished today and we come back at 5:15, they can probably provide a more detailed answer. My understanding, which definitely doesn't have the same as much depth or time as the Department of Law would offer, is generally the large possession offenses tend to get prosecuted by the federal government and not so much by state government, but sometimes they don't, and so I know I've heard the prosecutors say more than once they would like to have the tool, even if the vast majority of times the federal government takes the case on the times when they choose not to, they want to have that option.
Right. Okay.
Follow-up?
I'm glad to see us moving that to an A felony. I mean, I think that'll be that's a move in the right direction, and I'm also pleased to see we have the repeat offenders for misdemeanor possession. Your third time, you're looking at a felony. I recall that coming from somewhere, but it's a.
I have some strong memory that it's a former police officer who represents South Anchorage came up with that idea.
Well, I think it's introducing a higher level of accountability, and also it helps deal with the gray area of possessing and trafficking, and if the behavior continues, it gives the prosecution a tool. So,
Representative Eastman, you got another question?
Thank you. Just to the sponsor. Is indecent exposure, is that a sex crime currently?
No. It's not.
You mean in Alaska?
Yeah.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I would have to look that up. I think indecent exposure, there are criminal penalties. I don't know where that falls in terms of.
Well, actually, Representative Kopp looks like he's going to provide the answer to that question.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Slipping through his
privilege. It's indecent exposure first degree is AS 1141458. And basically, that's if the offender exposes their genitals in the presence of another person with reckless disregard that it was offensive, insulting, or frightening on that person. And it's a second degree offense if the exposure is to someone who is under 16 years of age. It's a Class A misdemeanor. If the indecent exposure is indecent exposure is before a person under 16, it is a Class A misdemeanor, and if they're an older person, it's a B misdemeanor, so it wouldn't be a registrable offense. It's a misdemeanor, yeah.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Representative Eastman.
And to the sponsor, can you help me figure out which sections dealing with the Criminal Justice Commission? A lot of sections here to deal with.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, related to the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission or the Alaska Judicial Council's
Criminal Justice Commission
responsibilities? Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I'm only aware of the sections that relate to the Alaska Judicial Council, and the Criminal Justice Commission is under the Judicial Council. I would have to review quickly those sections to see if there's any specific mention of the Criminal Justice Commission.
Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Stutes is helping me out.
Let's see. I had a couple more questions. The Class B felony is now first-time offense mandatory, looks like 30 days minimum. Are there some examples of what that would be of a Class B felony? I know that you can go both sort of egregious and, you know, just randomly. I don't have a book in front of me that might illustrate what a mandatory first-time sentence jail sentence would be for a Class B felony.
I think it's actually the presumptive sentence would be 90 days.
I'm sorry, yeah. It was 0 to 2. Now it's 90 days. So,
exactly.
I had my days off. So what are there some, or should I, I'm just curious. It went from 0 up to 90. So
So just different examples of Representative Copps looking through the book. He may have others. Theft in the first degree is a Class B felony. I believe assault in the second degree is a Class B felony. There are some of the sex offenses that are Class B felonies, but they are sentenced under a different framework than the Class B felonies in this. And that's three examples in Representative Cupp. Looks like
the assault second degree, this sexual abuse of minor second degrees, those are B felonies, and then the physical assaults. I think you hit those. Hit those two are I believe it is assault two. Assault one is an A felony, and assault second degree is a B felony. That's a serious physical injury, and that's what you're intending to do, or cause physical injury by means of a dangerous instrument. So,
and actually, in drug offenses, the lower level, the lower. We create a Class A felony that would become second-degree misconduct involving a controlled substance in this bill. So misconduct involving a controlled substance in the third degree with these changes would be a Class B felony. In current law, the second-degree controlled substance offense is a Class B felony.
Follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the simple possession three times is a felony, and this might go to the bill sponsor. Was there a thought of a look back period? So if someone did something when they're 20 and now they're 45, would that violation at age 20 would be part of the three counts, I'm assuming.
And what, I'm sorry, which section of the bill?
Section 31.
Oh, yeah. So those are just policy calls.
Yeah, you know,
those are policy.
I'm just wondering if that was.
We see, I mean, that the point you bring up is a valid point. We see it, you know, throughout the law. We see it with recidivist statutes on theft, even on assault. If you assault a child, I think it's either two or three times within several years. Even if it's a low-level misdemeanor assault, it can be prosecuted as a felony because, and I think there are time bars. So time bars, that's just a discussion we could have.
Okay.
On what that might look like.
Okay, thank you.
Presently, no time bars.
Presently, there's no time bars.
Right? I mean, DUIs have a time bar.
Yes, they do, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, DUIs, to go felony DUI, it's either 7 or 10 years, yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you. I guess I have one more follow-up, if I may, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got to find the section. It was about images and pictures and Section 26, viewing of an indecent picture of an adult, a Class A misdemeanor. And I didn't know what that is necessarily. I'm sure there's...
It's actually defined.
It's defined in
indecent
here,
viewing
is.
We could look it up.
You know. And one last follow-up as far as the children lowering from going from 13 to 16 years age to consent having pictures. And I'm sure this is defined also somewhere, but, you know, when you take a picture of your kid who's child and maybe not covered up, at what age is that? Is that defined as okay if you have a, you know, three-year-old running around?
Right. So in the law, one of the defenses is normal caretaking or parenting activities are all exempted, and the courts give it what's the legal thing that's at first.
It's actually covered in Section 27 of the bill.
Section 27,
It provides that a defense to the crime charge, subsection G1 on page 14, lines 18 through 20, is a defense if the acts occurred as part of the normal caretaker responsibilities for a child, interactions with a child, or affection for a child.
Okay.
Just in terms of the hypothetical that has had some discussion at different times about these images and what are indecent images, the example was three 15-year-olds, high school kids, go to somebody's cabin, and they, with the parents' permission, they all go skinny dipping in the lake by the cabin, and everybody's fine with it, and maybe they even take some pictures of each other, and that's with permission and generally okay. But somebody at the edge of the lake hiding behind a tree with a long telephoto lens would not have that permission. They would be treated differently.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Kopp and then Representative Eastman.
That must have been a while back. I think I may have been, I know, it was an additional clarifying comment to Representative Eastman's question earlier about indecent exposure being registrable. So to be registrable, it has to be a felony. And so what I said was correct. However, if that indecent exposure to someone under 16 or over 16 is combined with a sexual act like masturbating or something, then it can put you into felony territory, which is different than simple indecent exposure. Yeah.
Representative Eastman.
I think actually Representative Ledoux is ahead of me.
I have you on the queue, so you're up.
My question would be Section 31. I know we're specifically setting aside date rape drugs. I'm just wondering what's the rationale for specifically making sure those aren't affected by these changes?
I can help with that, Mr. Okay. So the date rape drugs possession is always a felony under any circumstance. So you don't like it misdemeanor possessions and then third time a felony is. So that's why they're carved out, because it's always a felony.
I would note, Representative Ledoux, I apologize. Go ahead.
So I'm trying to figure out in Section 23. Indecent production or viewing. Okay, so you've got your example of the skinny dipping in the lake, and maybe there are some pictures, and the parents gave consent, etc. What if somebody posts that on Facebook then? How does that work?
I think that's where you start getting into a lot of the complicated parts of modern society and the question of permission and who has permission to do what.
Well, that's kind of what I'm asking. How is it going to work in this bill? Because at some point, the court might be looking at that, and they're going to look at what we've said in the language of the bill and what we've discussed here in this committee.
Well, the first part, Representative Ledoux, and the question is a good one, its current statute that already makes it what you could say internet viewing of an indecent picture is a crime today. And so the same challenges that we have today exist with these changes in terms of how do you prosecute somebody and who do you prosecute and how do you find proof.
Just a follow-up here. So let's say it's illegal according to either this statute or the statute before this to post something on the internet. Well, what about all the people who see it? I mean, and then they're viewing it. I mean, and sometimes it like just shows up in people's news feeds. Are we going to prosecute everybody who's a friend of the person who posts it?
So I'll let Representative Cobb, before Representative Cobb answers, I would also note we have available online, Suzanne DiPietro from the Judicial Council is available online, Beth Goldstein, the acting public defender, is available online, Nancy Mead, general counsel to the court system, is here in the room and available, if they may be able to answer your questions. But Representative Cobb, your turn.
So I think Representative Klayman kind of commented on how technology drives an ever grayer area, but the key point in the law that will introduce evidence towards prosecution is a person has to knowingly view those things, and that knowingly means ties in the whole idea of they had to have some type of knowledge that this image was done without the consent of the person who's being depicted and probably was never authorized to begin with. Your example of mutual friends all sharing photos and one of them decides to do something dumb by uploading it on Facebook, that may be tough to prosecute, just like maybe an internet picture would be, unless you can really show that the viewer had specific knowledge that this was wrongfully posted and without consent. So there's a sum total of circumstances that they would have to look at before it would fit in the facts of the law. Yeah.
Further questions? Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the question of viewing something, if the viewing of it is a crime and the person being viewed, the person in the picture, you're asking if they consented. Well, you can't tell that just from viewing. And it's really easy on social media and texts and Snapchat and all that other stuff to view something that you don't know its origin necessarily or the intent or the level of consent. So if we're prosecuting someone for viewing that we don't know the intent, especially of an adult who may consent and we don't know just by viewing the picture, I guess that's where it gets a little gray, I'm guessing.
It's... with what Representative Cobb says, there's a lot of gray area in modern. I would note that not a question that folks are asking about, but one of the changes in this section is much of it comes out of one of the governor's proposed bills, is raising the age of consent to pictures themselves from 13 to 16. So under the current law, a 14-year-old could consent to somebody taking a picture of them. And with this change, if it stays at 13, raising the age from 13 to 16, the person under 16 would have to have parental consent to post a picture, whereas today somebody in the 13 to 16 age range would not be able or could give their own consent. Representative Ledoux.
Do you mean we could actually have a situation of a 14 or a 15-year-old and their parents consent to posting a nude picture of them on Facebook, and that's like okay because their parents consent?
I believe much of that goes not to the posting of the picture initially, but the consent to the picture in the first place. That's the consent that gets talked about in this law. So, for example, the kids skinny dipping in the example of the 15-year-old skinny dipping today, if there's four 15-year-olds, they could all consent mutually to take pictures of each other. and they wouldn't need parental consent, but with their raising that age from 13 to 16, they would need to have their parents' consent to having those pictures taken, which is different from the person behind the tree with the telephoto lens that has not consented to their picture being taken. Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but sexting is a common activity, and if this were to pass, a 15-year-old, by sexting a picture of themselves to somebody else, would be committing a crime because they're too young. First of all, consent or no consent. Secondly, the person receiving the image would be committing a crime because the person is under 16. Whether they wanted the picture or not, or wanted to view it or not, or didn't know the age or not. So a 15-year-old sexting a picture of themselves is committing a crime. And previously, you had to be under 13. And now,
if this goes through.
Yeah.
And that's it. I raise that because I...
Sexting's fairly common. I just want to throw that out there.
That's what I'm told. I know. Representative Eastman, looks like you have a question. And
thank you. So my question is, we're using the word production a lot in this particular section and related sections. Do we have a definition of production? What does it mean to engage in production of a picture? I mean, is that something like if I put in an email and send a picture, have I produced an image? Or for, you know, sake of the internet discussion, by posting something to an internet website, is that production of an image? Or, you know, taking an image on a cell phone like we were talking about, has that teenager just produced an image of themselves and that's now criminal?
So the language in this part of the bill comes from the governor's bill, and so I'm going to give you a brief answer, but say when we get the Department of Law, they will give you the full answer. But I believe it was to cover a broader range of production, not just in the old days with negatives and prints in the darkroom, but actually I believe it would be that sitting on one's computer and putting together an image would count as production of an image. Representative Ledoux and then Representative Cobb. Representative Ledoux, go ahead.
You know, I'm not sure I want to make it a felony for a kid to take a picture of themselves and then send it out over, you know, a text message. But at the same time, it seems pretty weird that it wouldn't be a crime if their parents consent to this. I mean, you'd have to be some pretty weird parent to say, oh, yeah, take a picture of yourself and send it out, you know, over Facebook, Instagram, or what have you. I mean, I got some problems there.
Well, I think that's why that question of 13 versus 16 in this place is a significant policy question. You know, those of us who have had kids that have passed through the 13 to 16 year range, as many of us here on the committee have, others are at an earlier stage in parenthood, but the notion that we had complete control of what the 13, 14, and 15 year olds were doing all the time was an interesting idea, but pretty far from reality.
And I guess I'm saying, if you do know, if your kid comes to you and says to you, I'd like to take a picture of myself naked and send it out over Instagram, and you say, yes, there's like something wrong there.
So those are some of the issues. Representative Kopp, you're next.
Well, I think what Representative Ledoux has pointed out is it's hard to legislate common sense. So it's interesting in the scenario where you're talking about this age group, these are all juvenile offenses and would be handled by a juvenile court, and the whole idea there is early intervention before any criminal record would attach. Technically, you're correct, a violation would occur by the literal definition. But like you said, if you had 14-year-olds sexting each other, images that would be in violation, I think probably a lot of us would maybe want something in here to, you know, if you're a school teacher or a superintendent, this comes to your attention, you can at least point to a law and say, you know, I need to get proper people involved. This is inappropriate. But you bring up You bring up examples of how technology makes more sharing possible. I think the question Representative Eastman raised about it's different. He said if you posted it on the internet, there you get into distribution of child porn, and you're making it accessible to millions versus like a one-on-one message. So, and that is a felony if you're distributing. So,
Representative Kopp is next in the queue, and then Representative Wohl. Okay, Representative.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was an incident in a East Coast town a while ago where some images were sexted, and of course, as these things go, they spread, and hundreds of kids in the same school were all charged, and the police came in and kind of charged them all, the whole high school, and then they had to figure out what to do with this problem, and they had to take another look at the laws, but it got kind of. Weird. Whole high school is under arrest.
Okay. I don't see.
I just, through the chair, Representative Klayman, and to Representative Eason's earlier question, I did want to clarify that Section 53 does relate to the duties of the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission. And in Section 53, we're asking that they include the data collected by the Department of Law, as described in Section 58 in their annual report that they submit to the legislature, just to clarify.
All right, I don't see any other questions. Okay, Representative Eastman.
Thank you. So it seems a little bit duplicative. So we have a report being made by the Department of Law, but the Department of Law isn't the one we want sending it to us. We want the Commission to send the Department of Law's report. Am I reading that right?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Eastman, that is my understanding. This section, questions related to this section might be better answered by someone from the Department of Law, because this was language that was included in a different crime bill from the governor's office.
Okay, thank you. Follow up?
And I'll just add to that. These sections actually came from proposals that were in one of the Senate bills, and they were introduced by Senator Hughes. And I think the short answer is that the Department of Law doesn't have any requirement to provide an annual report to us about anything, whereas the Criminal Justice Commission actually, as part of their statute, they're required to produce an annual report. So I think it was done more, the hard reality is that if you tell the Department of Law to submit it separately, there's already a reporting process that goes through with the Criminal Justice Commission, and that's, I think, the reason why they added it. But Representative Eason, follow up.
So I noticed this and some other sections we were talking about earlier, deal with various pieces of proposals from, bills submitted by the governor. I just wondered, was the governor, part of the consultation for developing this bill, or did that come from somewhere else?
As somebody that worked on the bill, there were times we consulted with the Department of Law about different features, but they weren't specifically consulted with what is in the bill, but they're definitely portions of the bill that reflect their input.
Thank you.
I see no other questions, which means that that's good news for those that want to have a great birthday party tonight. We will continue to hold this bill. Representative Wohl, I'll just schedule as we have a meeting tomorrow night to take public testimony at 5:15. Amendments would be due at noon on Friday, and we'll take up amendments at 1:00 on Friday. We will now adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is tomorrow, Thursday evening at 5:15 p.m. During that meeting, we will take public testimony on House Bill 145, both invited and public testimony. If anyone is considering an amendment to House Bill 145, please let my office know. Submit those amendments electronically by noon, 12 p.m. on Friday, April 26th, and with that, we will stand adjourned. It is now 2:32 p.m.